You're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Brody Wilson. This week, we have a special Local Motion for you. We're bringing you a regional roundup from Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Maeve Conran. KVNF is a member of Rocky Mountain Community Radio. It's a fantastic network of community radio stations like KVNF all over the Mountain West that come together to share stories and resources. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Regional Roundup, a production of Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a coalition of public and community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including this one. I'm Maeve Conran, the coalition's managing editor, and coming up on today's show, we'll hear how Denver is recognizing the labor organizing of janitors in the city.
And, you know, they came together at a few locations, started organizing, but really realized that they wouldn't be able to reach a level of standard throughout the industry if they didn't organize the entire city.
For one school in Southwest Colorado, lessons continue in the garden when school's out for summer.
Making sure to water everything a lot. Making sure to care for it a lot and not just like leaving it out there, seeing if it can, like, just be there.
A songwriting festival brings musicians to the Rocky Mountain West.
But I still can't make up my mind. Now my new excuse about moving there.
And a best-selling author talks about how his book is coming to the big screen.
They were filming this last summer in Italy, and the cast was crazy. It's such a cool ensemble cast.
From Rocky Mountain Community Radio, it's the Regional Roundup. But first, some news from around the Rocky Mountain West. The start of summer has been hot in the region, and long-range forecasts show that it's likely going to stay hot through the rest of the season. Our rural climate reporter, Caroline Yonas, has more on what the state of Colorado is doing to support its rural areas.
Seven of Colorado's 10 hottest years on record have occurred since 2010. State officials say there's been an increase in requests for information and resources around extreme heat, especially from rural communities. Marguerite Harden, with the Colorado Resiliency Office, says rural areas often have higher populations of people who are especially vulnerable to heat-related illness.
That includes older adults, children, people experiencing homelessness, outdoor workers, and recreation, people who are recreators.
She says urban areas often have enough money and political will to create their own extreme heat programs, which is why the state focuses heavily on rural areas. Colorado helps these jurisdictions develop heat action plans and can provide funding for things like cooling shelters, shade structures, and heat-resistant building materials. Caroline Yanez, Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
Aspen Ideas Health took place recently. The festival brought together medicine, public health, science, and policy professionals from around the world for a three-day gathering focused on some of the most pressing issues in healthcare. One topic under discussion was how music can be used for therapy and rehabilitation, pain, and stress management. And as Aspen Public Radio's Regan Mertz reports, it can also be used as a coping mechanism.
When you put your hand inside my hand.
A group of Aspen Ideas Health session leaders and attendees sing a song about cancer remission. The song appears in Daniel and Patrick Lazor's play called Nightside Songs. The play explores the ways music can help navigate sickness, grief, and healing. The brothers crafted the play after their grandmother and uncle died from cancer right after one another. They say they wanted to write songs about something that doesn't get portrayed in art often, cancer.
Another element of this show is helping to shepherd people through grief for, having that sounding board or having that person on the stage saying that thing that you experience. mm-hmm. that you haven't seen mm-hmm. before.
And being able to participate.
Yeah, you know. In that, right? Yeah.
The Lazor brothers say it isn't a completely sad play, though. There are also lots of laughs.
Here we go.
For Aspen Public Radio, I'm Regan Mertz.
The city of Denver is honoring the labor of thousands of workers whose jobs often go unnoticed. Their work happens in office buildings and hallways after most of us have gone home. Mayor Mike Johnston recently signed a proclamation declaring June 15th Justice for Janitors Day. KGNU's Dave Ashton spoke with Stephanie Felix-Sowie, president of the SEIU Local 105, about how janitors in Denver sparked a labor movement that spread well beyond Colorado.
So, Stephanie, tell us about 40 years of justice for janitors. This is an enormous milestone you're celebrating here. What is all the work that kind of came up to today?
Yeah, so janitors 40 years ago saw that the standards in the industry were really low. Everything from pay to no health insurance to their vacation days, sick days, how they structure their work in the buildings. And, you know, they came together at a few locations, started organizing, but really realized that they wouldn't be able to reach a level of standard throughout the industry if they didn't organize the entire city. And so they went out, worked with and sometimes against some of the contractors, but in the end, contractors in this city, you know, who have been here for decades, also new contractors coming to downtown Denver, know that the way forward for a thriving workplace, for a thriving workforce here in Denver, in the commercial building, commercial real estate building industry, is really to be at the same table. Sometimes disagreeing, but absolutely working on increasing standards across the board for janitors.
What are some of the hazards? You know, what is it that people need to really like be aware of that janitors are faced with on a regular basis?
Yeah, you know, I think if you've ever cleaned, if you've ever deep cleaned your house, you know that chemicals exist, right? You know, there's a program that we've worked with to bring here with a few of our contractors nationally. We worked with our national SEIU locals to bring what's called the green janitorial program, and that does include like safety around chemicals, how to use chemicals, which chemicals we should be using, which chemicals maybe we should no longer be using after all the information we know now, and all the way up into like how the buildings can become green themselves, right? And how janitors can really play an essential role in that. If you train a set of workers, if you train a workforce, they can continue to contribute, helping us progress, right? And so that also includes like composting, all those pieces. And our janitors were so excited and just like so thrilled at being given that opportunity to come in and learn about those things, and then try in an attempt to go and take them to the folks who are working in the buildings, and ideally sharing some of that information or exchange of information, as we have a lot of eco kind of minded folks here in Colorado, as we know. So the environment is important, right, to us as well, and to folks that you may not think.
What are some of the changes that have come about in the past 40 years from then compared to now?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, you have huge wins, huge movement as far as being able to lift the wages for workers, fight for health care, which is huge for our members. Many of our members have been around for 30 plus years and have, you know, had their children on their health care and seen their children now going off to college, graduating and becoming professionals in their own right. And so those things were won over the first few decades. We still have lots of battles and lots of fights in front of us. We see a ever-changing commercial real estate industry. Denver since COVID has really battled the vacancy issues, right? Getting revitalizing downtown. And what our janitors really want to contribute and say is that we're part of that. right? We're part of the revitalization. We're going to continue to show up every day, make sure that folks have buildings that are clean, make sure that we have cities that are clean, and that they can feel comfortable in going into the next 40 years, we believe, and probably not 40 if it's up to us, really will entail what's next for the janitors, what's next for workers in this country. We have a lot of janitors, like I said, who have been here decades, who are looking towards retirement. What does retirement look like for workers in this industry who have, you know, been loyal and contributed decades and decades of work to their employers? So lots to look forward to. Lots of work still left to do.
KGNU's Dave Ashton was speaking with Stephanie Felix Sowie, the president of SEIU Local 105. School is out for summer, but for one group of students in Southwest Colorado, the lessons learned during the year continue, even when the children aren't in the classroom. KSJD's Lacey McKay has more.
At the Mancus School Garden, the school year may be over, but the garden isn't taking summer vacation. Students spent the year planting vegetables, learning about soil, insects, and where food comes from. During a recent community open house, I asked one young gardener what they had learned.
Making sure to water everything a lot. Making sure to care for it a lot and not just, like, picking it out there, seeing if it, like, just be there.
The garden is part of the Montezuma School to Farm project, which brings hands-on food and agriculture lessons into local schools. But once students head home for summer breaks, somebody still has to keep the vegetables growing.
We're just looking for anyone who's interested in gardening. You don't really have to know anything about it. We're going to have, you know, dedicated tasks, whether you're someone who wants to carry stuff around or if you're someone who has a bad back and needs, you know, something a little lighter. So we're really trying to make it as easy as possible for people to come in and volunteer who want to learn a little bit more about growing their own food or just, you know, give back to the community in terms of food security.
Volunteers help water, weed, and maintain the garden until students return in the fall. The work doesn't just stay at school. Some produce is used in student activities. Some is sold through a student-run farm stand, and some is donated to local food banks. Supporters of the program say the lessons go far beyond gardening.
The importance of connecting students and youth to where their food is grown and how it is consumed, I think, are important lessons to instill in the next generation, and how this work within Montezuma School to Farm can foster more of a generation of giving back and taking care of themselves in a healthy manner.
Board member Greg Felsen says the garden serves as both an outdoor classroom and a gathering place for the community.
A garden kind of unites them around a common purpose. And in today's society, how much connection we have with each other is just more and more important.
Last year, the organization says it donated more than 6,000 pounds of produce to the food bank while continuing educational programs for local students. Back in the garden, another lesson was underway. Not in a textbook, in a handful of dirt. For KSJD News, I'm Lacey McKay.
You're listening to the Regional Roundup from Rocky Mountain Community Radio. I'm Maeve Conlon. Musicians from around the region gathered recently in Cedar Edge on Colorado's western slope for the fourth annual Grand Mesa Songwriter Festival. KVNF's Marty Durlin has more.
The Songwriter Festival took place in seven venues in the small downtown area, with 21 artists playing in various configurations over 3 days. The driving force of the festival is singer-songwriter David Starr.
The songwriter in the round format's a little different than an individual show, because it's you want to keep your songs concise and your story's concise so that everybody gets a chance to express themselves. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky to meet a lot of these people on my journey out doing this for all these years, and I see the people who are really good at it. Everybody's situation is a little different, but I think what ties us all together is we can't not do it. You know, if you're drawn to do it, you just have to figure out how to make it work. In my case, I've got a guitar store that's sort of my home base and keeps me grounded. And a lot of people I know in this group, for instance, some of them teach. Other folks will go only out on the road sporadically. You know, everybody's kind of got their own situation.
Is there a real difference between the people who make it big and the people who just play in the cafe?
Persistence, timing, and you just can't take luck out of the equation, you know? I guess it's a lot of it is right place at the right time, you know? I know a lot of folks that go to Nashville, for instance, and say, I'm just going to stick it out and see what happens, but most of them wind up going back where they came from in a lot of cases, or finding some other thing that they can make a living doing there while they're pursuing music. So it's rarely just one thing, you know? It's always serendipity and luck and talent and all those things. Who you know, that's a big part of it, just like in any career, you know?
Often one songwriter will be inspired by another's song and sing a tune that's related. Here's an example when Deb Shear of Denver played her song about not moving to Nashville because it would make her hair frizzy, then finding another excuse not to go. And Michael Lilly picking up on that excuse and presenting another take on it.
Yes, Nashville passed the hair test, but I still can't make up my mind. Now my new excuse about moving there is not about the weather or my hair. All I need to make my dreams come true is for Nashville to pass recreational too.
Do it, so I'll be safe. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. I came home last Friday night. Boss man had me all a tight. First thing through the door, I crack a beer. One sip, two sip, three sip, four. But the weekend calls for something more. That's when I face the worst of all my fears. I can't find my weed.
That's gonna be your part. Here we go, try it again.
Can't find my weed, can't find my weed.
Now I forgot where I was. Trying to teach it. Yeah, can't find it.
As founder of the Art Center and of the festival, David Starr is recognized as a leading light of the arts in Cedar Edge, but he's quick to put the credit elsewhere.
We couldn't do it without the volunteers in this town. This Art Center is the most, it's a holy place for me because these people show up and they do the work and they're happy warriors, and it's just, I live in the best place ever. What I've tried to do is make it the kind of place I'd want to live and hopefully leave it better than I found it, you know? We're only here for a little bit. We need to try to do what we can.
For the KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
And we finish out today's show with an author whose best-selling novel is coming to the big screen. Peter Heller writes about the rugged landscapes of the American West in his novels The River, The Guide, and The Painter. His book The Dog Stars came out in 2012, and it tells the tale of a pilot named Hig surviving in a post-apocalyptic Colorado with his dog and his heavily armed neighbor. I spoke with Peter Heller about the film adaptation that's coming out this summer. We spoke at an event earlier this year for the Radio Book Club, which is a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore.
So The Dog Stars is about two guys live at a little country airport north of Denver 9 years after super flu's killed almost everyone. Our hero Hig lives with his old dog Jasper. He's a blue heeler mix. His wife has been taken by the pandemic. He's lost everything. She was pregnant with her first child. the other guy, he lives with this guy Bangley, who's he's sort of a prepper gun nut who's been waiting for this his whole life. He's psyched. And they're an odd couple, and that's the way it starts. There's a radio, they don't know how many, the only people that are left on Earth are not so nice, mostly. But then there's a radio transmission he hears. Every day he gets in his little plane, and he flies, he's a pilot, and he flies this 1956 Cessna with Jasper. He tries to give Jasper little hearing protectors, but they don't stay on. They fly around looking for survivors every day. And that's how the book starts. So that book came out in 2012, and it was optioned right away, and it was kicking around, you know, different people wrote scripts and stuff, and it went out of option, and then I got a call from the guy who wrote The Revenant, Mark Smith, and he said, I love this book, and I'd really like to write the screenplay, and I loved The Revenant. And what I loved about The Revenant was that nature and the landscape was the major character. And for me, that's what makes, I mean, that happens in my books too, and I think that makes a Western, maybe, that's where the drama is always thrown up against, where the landscape is the major character and whatever drama is thrown up against this bigger power. And so I said, yeah, man, go for it. So he optioned it, he wrote the script, and then he gave it to Ridley Scott, and Ridley Scott, who did, you know, Blade Runners through Gladiator and Aliens and all that, loved the script. And turns out he really liked the book. And so they started making the film. They were filming this last summer in Italy. And the cast was crazy. It's such a cool ensemble cast. It's Hig is played by Jacob Elordi. And Margaret Qualley is Seema. And Josh Brolin is Bangley. And Ridley Scott told me that Josh Brolin was born for that character. It's like... And let's see, Guy Pearce is Pops, who just won an Academy Award. And there's some other cool names in there. Anyway, Benedict Wong. So Kim and I went over to be on set for a few days. It was outside, an hour and a half outside of Italy, and they take you into the country, you know, the producer Cliff, and you drive through this gate up into these woods, and there's a meadow, and there's a cabin at the top of the meadow. And you walk up this trail, and along the side of the trail is a pipe, and every 10 feet it's emitting mist. And there's fog generators in the field, so there's just fog everywhere. And then you realize fog is Ridley Scott's thing. I mean, if you watch even Blade Runner, everything was shot through fog. And okay, so you do that, and then they put you in this producer's tent, which is all black, and you've got 8 monitors, and then Ridley Scott's tent is up the trail, and it's covered in camo netting, and he can't direct from the set the way most, you know, you see in the movies, the guy in the beret, you know, behind the camera, he's shouting at the actors. He can't do that because he shoots with 8 cameras, and he'd be in line of sight. So he has to direct from this bunker with a headset. So here we are in the tent, and there's 8 monitors, and we get the headset, and there's 3 director's chairs, Kim's in one, and on the back of the chair, each chair on that strip of cloth is a constellation from the cover of the book, and a dog and a plane. I thought that was pretty cool. And then he gives you the headset, and you hear rain, and the cabin is off through the trees, and you're watching the monitors, and you see inside of the cabin, the rain's dripping through the roof on a table. And then they say, rolling, action. And then Guy Pearce turns to Jacob Elordi. Jacob Elordi turns to him and he says, thank you for not killing me. And Guy Pearce says, how'd you find us? And Jacob Elordi takes a pot of wet, fresh wildflowers and puts it under the drip on the table, like this thoughtful, pacifying gesture. And then he starts to talk about his wife, Melissa, who died in the pandemic, and his dog, Jasper. And I just started to cry. I was like, and Cliff, the producer, he reaches over, he goes, this is the experience I wanted you to have. And so they finish the scene, says, you want to go down on set? Let's go. So we walk down to the cabin, there's a corral there, and there's a little black donkey. And this guy runs up, he's in Italian, he says, oh, you're Peter. I know in the book this is supposed to be a cow who does this, but she wouldn't cooperate. So we got this little black donkey. And then I find out that in all the hotels where the crews and the talent were staying, they put racks of dog stars in Italian and English. Because there's an Italian. So I thought, that's confident that they're going to, you know, they're going to do, so, they're going to capture the essence. They must be confident. So here comes Jacob Elordi. And he's, you know, Cliff says, hey, here's Jacob, you know, this is Peter. Oh, I'm so glad, I love your book. And I said, man, I was really leery about you playing Hig because, you know, you're so much better looking and you're a lot younger, but you really inhabited the character. And I cried. And he started to tear up. And I realized he's just he's a working actor. And, you know, like everybody else, and Guy Pearce grabbed me and said, I'm so honored, I loved your book so much. And I was just standing there, I'm like, you're Guy Pearce. You know, his eyes are all lit up. And I'm like, thanks. But the whole thing, and then Ridley Scott, so then we go back to 10. Then this young woman comes in, opens the flap, comes in and says, Sir Ridley Scott is here to see you. Kim was like, what do we do? I was like, I don't know, be cool. So he comes in, he's 86. He has bad knees. He walked all the way down the trail to come in. And the producer said he hadn't been in the producer's tent in 2 months. Like, he was so excited. And here he is in the middle of 8 cameras shooting everything, and he told us stories for like half an hour of how he became a director and all this stuff. And so for the next few days, every time we saw him, he would just take a break and tell stories. And his life is really interesting, as you could say. He was like, yeah, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, he didn't, in that scene, he didn't have any lines. Good thing. He said, make my day. Okay, cut. So, yeah. So it was super fun. I came back from it and I felt like, you know, it had been a dream. Like, it was just crazy. It was so cool.
And so when is it coming out? I'm envisioning you at the premiere. You know, what's
August
next?
August 28th. Wow. Yeah. And will you be at the premiere? Yeah. I have an old tux for my friend's wedding. It is sky blue. It's got ruffles and stuff, but it'll be... No, it's going to be super cool, I think.
Well, just while we're talking about Dog Stars, the first week of the pandemic, all I kept thinking was, Dog Stars, this is Dog Stars.
It was weird, man. I was fishing in Chatfield, and you know, you guys know where the river comes into Chatfield, and there's all those big cottonwoods, and you kind of pretend you're in a remote place. And I drove through the gate that night when they closed Denver, March 20, whatever it was. I drove through the gate, and there was no one at the gate, no ranger. And it was the first time, it was weird. And there was no one in the park. There was one truck parked in the gravel lot where I park. And the fisherman was kind of wary. And I said, how you doing? He goes, suckers are running, no trout. And I just, hair on the back of my neck stood up because in the Dog Stars, that's what happens. There's no trout, there's just carp and suckers. And I started fishing and the sun went down and I just like, I was kind of creeped out. And then I drove up Wadsworth and everything was closed. You know, it was completely shut, and I just got, the hair on the back of my neck just stood up. I mean, I was like, so yeah. Kim, my wife says, you know, why don't you write something funny? Yeah. I think of Good Morning Vietnam, the corporal, he's like, somewhere inside I know I'm funny.
That was Peter Heller speaking at an event for the KGNU Radio Book Club earlier this year. The Book Club is a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. The film version of The Dog Stars will be released in cinemas in August. You've been listening to The Regional Roundup, a production of Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a network of public and community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including this one. Thanks to our rural climate reporter, Caroline Yanez, Aspen Public Radio's Reagan Mertz, KGNU's Dave Ashton, KSJD's Lacey McKay, and KVNF's Marty Derlin for today's show. Our theme music is Take Me Somewhere by Joel Adam Russell. I'm Maeve Conran. Thanks for listening.
This has been Locomotion on KVNF. I'm Brody Wilson. Thanks so much for listening. Locomotion airs every Tuesday at 5 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. If you ever miss a Locomotion on air that you want to hear, you can always find past episodes by looking under the news tab at kbnf.org and looking for Locomotion. Thanks so much for listening.